Thursday afternoon, a little chilly here in the Allstate Showcase studio. Dennis Rodkin comes by. We're going to talk about real estate. He's got the best story about a property in Lake Geneva in just a few seconds here. Also, though, in the second half, we'll talk to Ian Schur about a variety of things when it comes to tech. One of the stories is about Twitter's top 10 tweets of the year. Apparently, they've rolled up the rug. They don't expect any more, but that's coming up. And also a little bit later in the program, Elise Klink will be here to help holidays, or rather businesses, guide their way through the holidays. Do you say Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Joyeux Noël? Dennis Rodkin's in the studio. Welcome back, Dennis. How are you?
Happy holidays, Steve.
Let's just do Joyeux Noël.
Okay. Yeah, I can't pronounce it.
And you clearly, neither can I. Okay. No more time, because we've got to take all the time we need on this story of yours. Now, you and I have been talking about this through email for a couple of days.
Right, while I was working on the story, because it's so much fun to work on something like this.
And you said, you know, I've got one. I think it's going to be pretty good coming out. And you shared it with me last night. Wow. So let's go to Lake Geneva, a big old fat mansion, right?
40,000 square foot mansion. It was divided into condos in the 60s. It dates to the early 1900s, but it was divided into condos partly because it's so gigantic. And a year ago, a woman who lives in Los Angeles, who's from Elmhurst, started buying up the condos. There are seven condos. There are six condos. She has bought five. She now owns the whole first floor, second floor, and two-thirds of the third floor of this colossal lakefront mansion in Lake Geneva.
And you got to go online to chicagobusiness.com to see it, because it is colossal. Yeah. And there's before and after pictures. But she's from Elmhurst, right?
She grew up in Elmhurst, she told me. And one of the reasons I was excited about this, Steve, is that nobody has really talked to her. And I managed to get her on the phone.
Okay, let's do this. Let's talk about that. Okay.
Let's talk reporting.
Right. It is reporting, but it's exciting. So you're trying to find this woman because you hear about it. Not much of a profile.
Right.
So you actually sent a snail mail letter to her.
Yeah. When's the last time you did that?
Ever. Never.
I mean, I can find you, a reporter can find anybody, a Twitter account or something. She has a relatively low profile. I think there's a reason. You know, they have a fair amount of money.
Right.
And so we sent a letter to her. There had been a couple of mentions of her purchases in real estate blogs in Lake Geneva, in Los Angeles, where she lives. And it was all more speculative. What will she do? Because, again, she's got 5/6 of a 40,000 square foot building. And so what is she going to do? Is she going to make it a hotel? There were all kinds of speculation. And I wrote her a letter, and she called, and it was great, because then I found out she wants to get that last condo, but of the ones she has bought, of the five she has bought, only one was on the market. In the other cases, the owners came to her and said, will you buy me out?
Let's do that again then. So she was in town visiting.
She was visiting family.
I'm sure she saw the Cranes article about on the first floor condo for sale a few years ago. She goes up there, she buys it, and then she tells you that she's bought every other one but one, and not because she's pursued them, but because people have come to her and said, look, we're ready to sell.
Yeah, so in hindsight, it makes a lot of sense to have bought most of the house, but her foresight when she bought the 12,500 square foot first floor, which is enormous, was this will be enough. This will be our, they live in Los Angeles. Again, she's from Elmhurst, but hasn't lived there in years. This will be our Lake Geneva property. And that first floor is kind of like a hotel lobby with a ballroom, that sort of thing. Doesn't really have bedrooms per se, so she's created a bunk room and things like that, thinking that's what she's going to have. And then the other owners start coming to her and saying, I would sell to you. And so once she got to five out of the six, she told me.
Well, maybe they saw the size of the check she was writing. And
that
you
could
know.
Be. We and haven't so, even mentioned figures yet, have we?
No. She
has spent on purchases $13.5 million between November 2016 and November 2017. She spent $13.5 million to buy those five condos. She tells me she has spent at least another $2.5 million. So she's in for $16 million at this point. Doesn't even yet own the whole building, and has quite a bit more to spend on renovations, let alone purchasing that last condo.
Okay, and so now we go, you're writing the screenplay, because here's this rich woman who owns 6/7 of the building,
right,
and the holdout old man living upstairs in the corner. But that's not the way this story goes.
He does not appear to be an old man, first of all. But no, he's not a holdout. That too was something that people were speculating in Lake Geneva.
Because it just sounds like, oh, she's going to come in, she's going to force these people out.
And she bought the most recent one in November, so I was wondering, is something going to sell in December as my story appears, that kind of thing. But it turns out those sellers have not come to her and said, will you buy? So she has essentially made it clear, when you're ready, I'll take it.
And she told you she's not going to pursue them.
She's not going to push that. She could. Legally, as the owner of the majority of the homeowners association, she could say, you're out. That's true. I mean, we've talked about that with the conversion to rental here in the city. Majority of a condo ownership group can say, you all have to follow our lead. But she hasn't done that. She's waiting for them, you know, tune in a year, 2 years, perhaps that changes. But at the moment, what she said is, when they want to sell, I'm sure they'll come to me.
So we haven't named her, but you've named her. And
yeah.
I don't know how to pronounce her last name.
I think it's Trahan.
Tina Trahan. Her husband is the CEO of Starz.
And former CEO of HBO.
Okay.
And
so do they have a history of spending?
Well, they have a $7 million mansion in, I guess it doesn't really count as a mansion at $7 million in Santa Monica.
Where, that doesn't count as a mansion?
Which, well, $7 million is not as high in Los Angeles as it is here. And she told me that it's temporary because they're building an $18 million mansion elsewhere in Los Angeles in Palos Verdes. So they've got that. And they also, I think, part of their history of spending, which I mentioned in the story, is they were reported by the New York Post, and then she confirmed to me, to have spent almost about $1 million on a
Wait a minute, stop. Okay, everyone out there listening, if you're driving, focus on the road. But, but you're going to want to hear what Dennis has to say. Okay, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
They've spent about $1 million. In October, they spent about $1 million on a children's Halloween party that featured Snoop Dogg and DJ Khalid.
Not a costume, but a real Snoop Dogg.
An actual Snoop Dogg. And she did, somebody told the New York Post, and then she told me yesterday he wasn't smoking marijuana. It was a children's party.
Right.
But so the idea here is these are people with a lot of money. So I went to Lake Geneva and said, so is this just, you know, LA money pouring into Wisconsin? And two different agents who work at the top of the market there said, no, there's a $12.5 million estate under contract right now. They had a sale at nearly $10 million at the end of 2016, a year when there were multiple sales over $6 million. And that's not true here. One of the things I said in the story is at $13.5 million for her purchase, she has paid more for that home than anybody in Chicago has paid for a home since December 2015. We haven't had sales at that level, but Lake Geneva.
I like all your stories, but man, I love this story.
It was so much fun to report.
And just to the history of the building too, right? Because it was a girls' school for a while. It was a restaurant. Tony Resco owned one of the condos. My God, when this stuff just must just been jumping off the page for you.
It was. I wish I could have written three times the length. The builder, Otto Young, who died in the mansion, only owned it for he was only alive for the first few years of the mansion, but his family continued to own it. He died in 1906. They owned it till 38. He owned half interest in the Fair, which is one of the earliest department stores in Chicago. His estate sold the land where the Hilton is now on South Michigan Avenue to Stevens, who was building that hotel.
Wow.
Lots of others. There's a skyscraper downtown. Huge. I mean, he died with a fortune that today would be worth about $650 million.
And now there's this beautiful building that looks like it will again become a single family home for a California family to visit, what, a couple times a summer?
Well, I don't know. You know, I mean, if you, maybe once you've really done it.
You know, maybe they ice boat. Maybe they'll come back in the winter.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Dennis Rodkin, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
We took all your time on the one, but I love the story.
But it's a fun one.
Read more. Check this out. ChicagoBusiness.com. See you again in a couple weeks or so?
Yeah.
Right now, Bill Geiger is in the studio. Always good to talk with Bill. Our regular conversations with Bill Geiger, sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Good to be here with you, sir.
You got some circles under your eyes there. Did you have a client party or something last night?
We had a client Christmas party last night.
How was that?
It was phenomenal.
I bet it was. Did people enjoy it?
Every year we try to do it just a little bit better, and after so many years, it's pretty darn good.
So next year is going to be a real challenge.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk retirement. And we were just talking off the air about, and you know, you bring things up sometimes that are kicking my head because I think of things sometimes in an incorrect way or incomplete way. And you said, you know, a lot of people think a 401k plan is a retirement plan. And you said that, I'm like, well, yeah, kind of that's what it is.
Well, it's not really. A 401k plan, if you think about it, is a savings vehicle. Your employer helps you. You get to put money in before taxes. You get matches. And over your working career, you can save a lot of money and grow a lot of money. But then what do you do with that 401k plan when you retire? The second question is, after that growth is, how are you going to pay your bills for the rest of your life? How are you going to convert that 401k plan into something that gives you dependable, sustainable income
on a monthly basis? I've got a savings strategy right now,
right?
But I don't really have a retirement plan.
That's correct. Right. You have a savings strategy, an investment strategy to grow money, but then how are you going to pay your bills? Think about it in that terms. And whenever we have couples come into the office, the first one that gets this is the wife. How are you going to pay your bills when nobody has a paycheck anymore?
And
for the rest of your life.
And so your plan is, the idea is that you should set something up so that you've got income coming in.
Yeah,
so
you take a part of your portfolio and you create income for yourself that's dependable and sustainable, that hits your account every month, and you can count on it.
I was about to tell you off the air, I'm going to be 55 next year, early
right.
next year. So I actually just learned that I could qualify for a pension at an old job I had.
Right.
And it's not much money. I mean, it might be $20. I don't know what it would be. There's no reason for me to take that now and invest it, right? Because I would have to pay income tax on it.
You know what you should do is you should find out from that old job whether you have the option to take a lump sum.
Right.
Because with that lump sum, you can create your own private pension and not have to worry about that old job making good financial decisions for the rest of your life.
So even if then I have to figure that out, right? If maybe a lump sum now would be less than a lump sum later, but it could still work for me.
A lump sum now gives you control. A lump sum now, you can take those monies and you can create your own income, your own effectively private pension plan that you can be responsible for the rest of your life.
Right.
You know, I see people all the time that their past company has declared bankruptcy, and all of a sudden their pension plan gets cut in half. They'd been far better off to take the lump sum money and create their own pension.
So when you talk to me, do you like walk out of the studio and say, I've been trying to tell him this for years, and he's still asking me these questions?
No, I just figure sooner or later we're going
to get
there.
Come in.
We're going to get there.
Well, how many people you think might be in that situation where they could take a lump sum, whether from a 401k or from a pension, and they don't really quite realize that?
Quite a few. Quite a few people are eligible for a lump sum from their pensions, but they don't quite know what the next step is.
Right.
Okay.
I would imagine it would be more attractive. Like for me in this case, I'm not going to depend on this pension.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the decisions, there's a little less pressure when it comes to the decision.
Well, the nice thing about you and where you're at, you're 55 years old. If you can get
not yet, Bill.
Almost. Okay. If you can get a lump sum, you've got a fair number of years that you can make that income very, very powerful for you.
Right. And so if I'm getting to 55, that's starting to get in your wheelhouse too, right?
Late 50s, early 60s. Yes, sir.
So at the end of the year, are there things we should
be
doing?
A couple more years, you can qualify.
Are there things we should be doing at the end of the year now to sort of clean things up or get prepared for the next year? Or how do we?
You want to start your planning. You really want to sit down and figure out, how am I going to have income to pay my bills for the rest of my life? And how am I going to keep from losing my tail, from losing half my portfolio when this bull market stops? And I'm not saying it's going to stop soon. It will stop eventually.
We know it will stop.
Eventually. Eventually, right. It'll be a correction. We just don't know when it is. So what a great time at the peak of the market to be thinking about these things, to be taking some action before you have a loss.
And probably, check out your 401k situation or pension program
and
things like
program.
That as
yeah.
you close
and we,
out the year.
And we help people with that all the time.
All
the time. As a matter of fact, we're going to do something special. Steve, the next five callers who call in with at least $500,000, we'll help them put together a full-blown retirement plan. It's a $3,000 value. We're going to do it complimentary.
Nice to see you, Bill.
Good to see you, sir.
Kim, Ben Awakenight, the producer of the program, and I were kind of laughing during your sports because it's just a funny sentence. I don't want you to read the whole thing again, but
that Nikola is back because he was punched in the face.
After he was punched in the face by his teammate. Yeah, it's just a funny world we live in.
That's what we would call, I guess, not a team player, or, you know, now, Bobby Portis, not a team player.
I don't want to tell you how to write, but in 1 o'clock, the only thing I would use the word socked, because I think that sounds more juvenile.
Socked?
After he got socked in the face.
Okie doke.
I'll
change it.
It's 12:37. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Ian Scher is on a phone line. He's a senior editor at CNET.com. And, he joins us most Thursdays. I think it's during his lunch break. Ian, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. So many things to talk to you. Oh, I know what I want to start with. So, you know, I think one of the stories you suggested for me was about how, you know, the golden age is over for Silicon Valley or the tech world, that they've been called before Congress and all of this, and which is all very true. People of the year, or women of the year, persons of the year, was the woman who wrote the blog post for, I think it was Uber, right, about sexism there. So we see that, we recognize there's a problem, and then Glassdoor comes out with their surveys of best places to work, and once again this year, Facebook is number one. So how does all that fit together?
Well, politics and how the employees feel are two different things, right? And so this survey that's been done by Glassdoor for the last decade is looking at employee feedback, and what Glassdoor is supposed to be is this place where you can get feedback on the place you work and also get a sense of how much different people are paid, so that when you're applying for a job there, you can make sure that you're kind of asking the right amount. And so they have this list they put out, and in the top 20, Facebook's at the top. But there's also, you know, other tech companies like Apple is in there. Google is number 5. And so but there's also other companies like Bain & Company, the consulting group,
right.
In-N-Out Burger, Lululemon. So there's a lot of them in there. But it's an indication that, you know, Silicon Valley may be under the most scrutiny it's ever been, but that doesn't stop the employees from enjoying working there.
Well, and so, yeah, well, my point is, you're right, being called before Congress, that's one thing very different, but there have been lots of complaints about sexism in the workplace in Silicon Valley.
Yes.
And so it's good to see that and this comes from the people who work at Facebook, like working at Facebook.
Yeah, well, I think part of it also is that these companies all are trying to come to grips with how to solve these problems, right? And so it's affecting a certain percentage of their employee base. Unfortunately, as we've written on CNET many times, there are not that many women or minorities who work in Silicon Valley and who are hired by these companies. And so as a result, there are less people to complain to. So it's going to be interesting to see if they finally start ramping up hiring of people who are not white men, whether or not these surveys will start showing different information.
That's right. I guess if you're a sexist guy and you're working with only other sexist guys, it must be a pretty happy place to work.
Well, I'm not even going to go there. I've got a friend, for example, who works for Uber, and he doesn't interact. He doesn't have the problems that sexism and all of that. It doesn't happen in his group. He hasn't experienced it. He doesn't personally have anything that he's seen, even though he's aware of the larger problems. And so when you ask him, should I work at Uber, he's like, yes, absolutely. But, you know, he's not a woman and he's not sexist. He just doesn't interact with it himself. It's a large company.
I got that. It's kind of discouraging that of the top 20, you have to go to number 19 to get a church. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints comes in at a strong number 19, number one among religions this year in the Glassdoor survey. I'm not sure what that says, Ian.
I think it says that the Church of Latter-day Saints is very good to their employees.
Okay. Now, you're going to have to hold my hand, as you do sometimes, and walk me through these next couple of stories. It has to do with what? A war between Google and Amazon, and
right.
Amazon Prime Video is another one, and Apple TV. Explain for me the significance of all of these fights and why it matters to us.
Yeah. So why it matters to you is actually pretty minor. Why it matters to these companies is huge. So basically, Amazon and Google have been going at it for a while now about whether or not Amazon will sell Google's products on their site. So if you go and you want to buy a Google home, for example, you type that into Amazon, you may not see one. And you may not see one for their Google Cast, which is their thing that plugs into your TV, and a bunch of other stuff. And of course, these are important products to Google. And it's Amazon's right not to sell them. But the problem is that Google says, well,
Ian, so Amazon's not selling them because those products compete with products that Amazon is selling.
Exactly, okay. Right? Amazon sells a product called the Fire TV, which competes with Google Cast. They sell the Amazon Echo, which many of us know about now, that has the Alexa thing in it. That competes with Google Home, right? There's a lot of competition happening, and Amazon has decided that instead of letting you and me choose by buying it or not on Amazon, they're just not going to sell Google's products. And so Google has turned around and said, all right, well, we can play this game too. And they're shutting off access to YouTube from all of Amazon's products. So now if you have an Amazon TV, if you have an Amazon Echo, you cannot listen to YouTube or watch YouTube. And so it's just this escalating fight where the only losers are you and me.
So if I have an Amazon TV, which I'm not sure I knew existed, and it's a smart TV where I can go online, I can't go on YouTube. It's YTube has blocked Amazon TVs from using YouTube.
Starting January 1st.
Okay.
Yes. And by the way, Google is not the only one fighting this battle with Amazon. To some degree, Apple is as well. Apple TV was also not sold on Amazon for quite a while. So Amazon's products would be front and center. But the Amazon and Apple seem to have kind of buried the hatchet. And in fact, Apple didn't have Amazon Video on the Apple TV for a very long time. And now that's finally come out. So there is indications that these things can be resolved. But in the meantime, Google and Amazon are going at it pretty hard.
Okay, I want to talk Nazis here in a second. But before we do, I still don't understand Apple TV. My parents have Apple TV. I don't know what it is.
Okay, so the very basic of it is it's a version of an iPhone that's designed to work with your TV. It's really that simple. So everything you like about your iPhone versus where it's the apps or the connection to iTunes or photos or whatever, that works now on your TV. And it's a pretty nifty product. I have one. I also, by the way, have a Google Cast, and I have played with a Fire TV that we have in the office. And so, I'm a tech nerd, right?
Right.
But the thing is that a lot of people are in your position. They're like, why would I get this? And here's the other thing is that as TV makers start putting more and more apps into their TVs, like LG has an entire app store for their TVs, it makes Apple TV feel less necessary. But that is why you see people like Amazon trying to cut out their competition.
I got you.
And Apple also, they have Apple Music now, right? You can't play that through the other players. You have to have an Apple TV. So they're all playing these games to try and lock you in.
All right, we got a minute left, but Liza Malloy has written a fascinating story about the alt-right Nazi sympathizers in this country and how they're using money.
Yeah.
PayPal, other places, they've cut them off. And now they're creating their own crowdsourcing for fundraising?
Yeah, and it's a really kind of uncomfortable situation, right? What it is is that they say they're trying to support their own kind of community and whatnot, but
they're arguing freedom of speech.
Exactly, and that they're being censored by Apple and PayPal. But of course, the reality is that even their names say this. It's about financing hate speech, right? We've got one is called Counterfund. Another one is called Goy Fund Me, which is a very uncomfortable joke about Jews. And then there's one called Hatreon, right, instead of Patreon, which is the popular one. And so it just underscores how, it's interesting how online, the spread of online hatred, which is one of the conversations we've been having over the last couple of years now, is really finding a way into modern culture and into mainstream. And that's really interesting.
It just keeps seeping through. Read about that and a lot more at CNET.com. Ian, great to talk to you. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Elise Glink is on phone line. She's the publisher of ThinkGlink.com and the CEO of Best Money Moves. We talked with Elise about that. You should check out Best Money Moves. It's an HR app for businesses. It helps their workers measure their financial stress and then sort of gives them tools to deal with that. Check that out at BestMoneyMoves.com. Elise Glink, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
It's nice to be here, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so next Friday, I think this is public knowledge. WGN, a bunch of the shows, they're having little vignettes. It's kind of the holiday party and things like that. So Bennett and I have to come up with something Christmassy to do, right? And yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's the holiday spirit. You definitely want to get in it.
Yeah, it's a struggle. But anyway, so so we're working on a skit where we're talking and I'm interviewing an elf and Bennett is the elf. And that's going to be, but the only reason I'm bringing it up is because what I want the elf to say at the very end is happy holidays. and not say Merry Christmas, because I just think that would be funny for an elf to say Happy Holidays. And I bring it up because people get so worked up about what others say this time of year. It kind of, I get a kick out of it, because it's like, why do you get upset about someone wishing you well, no matter what the language? It's a well wish, well, you know, just take it. But people do. It's a sensitive thing. And I would imagine if you're a business or a business owner, regardless of your own sensitivities, you've got to be worried about what other people are thinking.
I think that, you know, what we've lost is the civility a little bit to be kind to others and be respectful of the way that they choose to celebrate holidays. I'm all for Christmas. We have a couple of Christmas trees in our office. We also have a menorah. We celebrate for the people who work for us, and we want to be supportive of whatever it is they're celebrating. And I think when you go out there, saying Happy Holidays if you're an elf is very funny.
Thank
or it could
you.
Be, depending on your delivery, Steve.
Oh, but no, that's up to Bennett.
Oh, Bennett's going to be the one to say that?
Right.
But overall, I think being respectful of everybody's holidays and as inclusive as possible goes a long way this holiday season in particular.
All right. So, but if but there are the people who are going to be upset, put out a little bit, if you as a business owner send them a card that says Happy Holidays, right? Do you not worry about them and just go the holiday route, or do you ignore it altogether, or what do you suggest?
Well, I think if you know what they like, you can certainly be more specific. But if you are like most business owners, like we are, and you're planning sort of one big holiday greeting that you're going to send out to everybody, you know, our take is be as inclusive as possible. If you don't specifically want to say Happy Holidays because you think that's going to be offensive, then write Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, and whatever other holidays are being celebrated this time of year.
Yeah, dot, whatever works for you. Right.
Whatever works for you.
All right, so there's that. You know, let me just tell you something. Every spring, I say this is going to be the summer that I golf. I'm going to get out there, I'm going to hit the links, and I'm going to enjoy the weather. And every winter, I say next year is going to be the year that I fully engage in LinkedIn. I am going to make it my baby.
All right. So what are you doing about that?
Well, right now, I'm just talking to you and trying to figure out what I should be doing about it.
Well, I'm a big believer in LinkedIn for business-to-business communication, and it's easy to focus all the attention on Twitter or on Facebook and developing Facebook groups, but what really is the case is you've got to figure out where your audience lives, and for business-to-business, there's really nothing better than LinkedIn, and figuring out how to create the kind of messaging that's going to cut through so that your contacts and your followers are more engaged and they want to hear more from you. That's really the trick with LinkedIn. But I think there's a lot of opportunity with creating your own unique information and content to get that point across. And let's just use your travel business because it's an easy thing to talk about. When you talk about the different travel events, I could easily imagine you doing a regular posting on locations, taking polls of where people might want to go, you know, conversations with people who are on those trips so that you get like this little insider thing. And really what you're doing is you're pushing out to organizations that may want to work with you, you know, setting up these tours going forward.
So that's what
I think having that kind of programmatic thing is really smart.
So you're talking, so the point really is you're not talking about the profile you set up. You're talking about doing regular posting and keeping a profile, not a profile, but postings and a presence that way than in other people's feeds.
I think so, because I think that, and I'll talk about another person that we worked with to help set this up. She runs a networking group for executive women. And, you know, every single day I see a little video with her in it at an event, or I see her congratulating one of her members on something that's going on and she writes something about it. And the next day she might be talking about a program that they're going to have in 6 months. And so I think what she's doing is being a very visible advocate for her organization and through that engaging more people in it. And that's really the beauty of LinkedIn with the business-to-business communication. That's very different from what you'd see on Facebook or on Twitter.
All right, 2018, here we come. Elise Glink, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome. I'm going to go do my LinkedIn profile right now.
And I'm going to check it out.